day and welcome to the Access Bank PLC Full Year 2013 Results Presentation Conference Call. Today's conference is being recorded, and at this time I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Herbert Wigwe, Group Managing Director and Chief Executive Officer. Please go ahead, sir.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you so very much for joining Access Bank's Full Year 2013 Results Conference Call. Today's presentation will be done in two parts. My CFO, Seyi Kumapayi, whom I'm sure you're all familiar with, will take you through the operating environment and an overview of performance before giving a detailed explanation of our 2013 results. I will then discuss the priorities for 2014 and our 2014 targets before turning over to you for questions. First, I would like to make some introductions. My name is Herbert Wigwe. I assumed leadership of the bank as managing director at the end of last year, having worked closely with Aigboje Aigimokwede, our former managing director, since 2002, and served as his deputy for the past 11 years. Joining me on the call today are my deputy, Obi Nawosu, and the rest of our executive director team. Given our new scale, we have restructured the management firmly to put operations at the heart of our business under the leadership of Obinna, who is obviously one of our most experienced bankers. Obinna has over 23 years of diverse experience, and he will take direct responsibility for IT, operations, our subsidiaries business, as well as our channels to market. He's driving the bank's growth and momentum plan alongside me. Also here today are Elias Ibn Akenzwa, who is our executive director of our corporate and institutional banking division. Roosevelt Obonna is also here. He's our executive director of our commercial banking division. Titi Oshuntoki, who joined us this year, is our executive director for our business banking, which is basically our SME business. And we also have Victor Itoku, executive director of our personal banking division. Also here with us are our CFO, or our CRO rather, Greg Jobome, Dr. Greg Jobome. And we also have our head of channels, Shebu Ogbonewo. And, of course, last but not the least, our ED in charge of our operations and IT, Mrs. Ojini Olagere. Before we discuss our annual results, please permit me, by the way, you can see this kind of our management team on slide 4, if you can basically go to the website where our presentation is hosted. But before we go into our annual results, please permit me to give a historical context to our 2013 numbers, which is out on page 4, or slide 4. As you are aware, we acquired Intercontinental Bank in 2011 November, and we completed the physical integration of Intercontinental in 2012. Obviously, this merger has created a large, diversified business with very significant retail potential from some 6.5 to 7 million customers. But like most acquisitions, however, it also came with its own legacy issues. The principal issue in this case was the structural illiquidity which existed on the existing portfolio of AmCon bonds which we had at the time and which were acquired from Intercontinental. Of course, Intercontinental also had significant public sector deposits. Now, the regulatory headwinds which came in the course of 2013 and, of course, commenced in 2012 meant that the bank had to decide to discount some of these bonds at a significant loss of 7.5 billion in 2012 and 2 billion naira in 2013 to extract what I can only refer to as the trapped liquidity in those bonds. The AMCON bonds did not only create liquidity constraints, we also found ourselves in a situation where we had to pay an increased AMCON levy from 0.3% in 2012 to 0.5% in 2013, and therefore there was an incremental charge of 8.8 billion on an enlarged but inefficient balance sheet that came from the immediate acquisition. We had a further regulatory intervention by way of the COC reduction across board, which affected, or impacted earnings by a reduction of 6 billion naira. The increase in the cash reserve ratio on public sector deposits from 12% to 50% also affected profitability by about 4 billion in 2013. The bottom line of all of this is that those events in 2013 had the implication of increasing our cost-to-income ratio in the course of that year. However, despite those events, which were largely out of our control, we remain extremely confident that this was the right deal construct, and it is, of course, already a value-accretive combination. So for us, 2013 was a pivotal year for Access Bank, and as we enter 2014 now, with those legacy issues clearly behind us, we are now poised to reap the full benefit of the combination, which has been truly digested. We have now made the transition from a wholesale bank, clearly, to a diversified business with a strong, sustainable platform for growth. We now have an increased or enhanced corporate banking business with strong capacity for industry leadership, thanks to the significant number of top-tier customers which we digitally acquire, but which we started acquiring at the end of 2013, and our value chain proposition. We now have an enhanced commercial banking business, which is dominant as far as our retail business is concerned, and it's now deepening market share in priority market segments, which we had worked on throughout 2013. We also have a customer-centric approach to our retail and SME banking, which is based on the detailed customer segmentation, market segmentation, which we had worked on in the course of 2012, but largely through 2013. And are leveraging off a large diversified customer base, and will now be providing enhanced products to the targeted groups where we see the gaps in the market and with strong growth potential. Finally, we have a deep bench of talent which we've been building, and as I mentioned, we have restructured our operations to put operations truly at the heart of our business because of the scale and enlarged retail capacity which we have, and ensure that our IT and support functions have the right focus, capacity and leadership required to enable us to drive best practice all through the bank. All of this gives us a platform for growth, and we have some very clear priorities for growth this year, which I will take you through in a lot more detail at the end of this presentation. I will now hand you over to Seyi Makwai, our CFO, who will talk you through our financial performance.
All right. Thank you, Herbert. We are now on slide 7, which is the operating environment. In 2013, overall, Nigerian economic indices continue to be stable. We saw GDP grow by about 7.7%, essentially large contributions from the non-oil sector. We have also seen inflation rates improve from about 12% that we closed in December 2012, to close at about 8% in December 2013. Largely, inflation remained within the single digits throughout 2013, which is what CBN wanted to achieve. This is obviously supported by the tightening policy of the CBN. Oil prices in the year remained stable year on year. However, what have we seen? We have seen depletion of our fiscal buffers, especially the continued decline in oil revenue, diminishing external reserves, and of course the excess crude oil savings accounts. On the banking industry side, clearly we saw that in 2013 we had significant regulatory headwinds, some of which Herbert has talked about, resulting from the CBN's banking policy, which essentially continued from where it stopped in 2012. We saw increase in CRR for banks, both on public sector and private sector more recently. We've seen clear changes in the bank tariff in terms of COC as well as payment of payment of interest on savings accounts. We've seen increase in AMCON. I mean, these are all things that have essentially affected, put pressure on any, as well as cost of the banking industry. I'm moving to slide 9, which essentially, what are the key messages, all right, for Access Bank in that we're trying to pass across in 2013. I think the first thing is essentially around that the financial performance for the bank was impacted by regulators. I mean, Herbert has talked about a number of them earlier in his opening remarks, so I will not talk about the first one. Now, what we've also seen is that we've seen very strong growth in our non-interest income, largely driven by our credit-related fees, strong trading revenues, as well as dividends from our equity portfolio. We've also seen very, very strong loan growth to very high quality obligors in our target segment, and largely on the foreign currency side, to enable us to offset the losses on account of regulatory headwinds. Most of this growth, however, came in the second half of the year. What you find is also our asset quality has also improved in the period. NPL ratio is down to 2.75%. We have also seen right back in collective impairment on the back of improved asset quality and obligor migration. Our deposit mix also continues to improve. Even though our year-on-year growth about 11%, we essentially replaced some of the high-cost deposits that we carried for from 2012, which has seen like a 10% reduction, basis point reduction in our cost of funds. You know, this is despite the high interest rate environment. I'm on slide 10, which essentially is our key performance highlight. What you find is gross earnings year-on-year increased slightly, even though NIM was came down to about 6.3. Loan growth was largely driven by lower yielding assets. Profit after tax of about 7.5. Our tax rates are starting to normalize, given the fact that a large proportion of our asset we generated excess income was sold in the course of the year. We are paying the total credit of 60 kobo. 25 kobo was paid as interim. 35 kobo is proposed as final dividend. This excludes the non-cash distribution of WAPI of about 4.1 billion, which comes to about 18 kobo per share. So if you add it, it's something like 76 kobo per share in terms of dividend. Balance sheet, our balance sheet grew by about 5%. Loans and advances about 11%, customer deposits around 32%, and customer deposits is now about 20%. This is on the back of strong loan growth that we've seen in the year. Liquidity ratio is at 40%, which is reflecting the increased cash reserve and the amount of money that we have to sterilize with the CBN in the course of the year. Loan to deposit ratio up to 60%, largely seeking to optimize the balance sheet. And then ROA at 15%, reflecting the very challenging environment, particularly for Access Bank in 2013. I'm on slide 11, which essentially highlights our statement of comprehensive income. And in 2013, we saw a reduction of about 20% on our net interest income. And like Herbert has alluded to, we saw significant sale of AMCON bonds in Q3 2012, which led to the contraction of the asset book and consequently interest income. The replacement of this asset, we only started it in the second half of 2011. In addition to all of this, we also saw the fact that regulatory headwinds in respect of cash reserve and also constrained our ability to grow interest income. On the interest expense side, our focus in 2013 was to begin to replace the expenses deposit that was acquired in 2012, which were carried forward to 2013. These have now completely run off and replaced the lower cost deposit, and we see that in our cost of funds, we've been able to achieve some reduction. Non-interest revenue grew by about 48%, essentially compensating for the reduction that you saw in interest income. We have significant strong dividend income, strong credit-related fees, trading and other income, including about 4.8 billion in valuation gains. We also saw significant impairment write-back, which is driven by our positive obligor migration. Expenses is up about 19%. Herbert alluded to that as well, that AMPON expenses grew from about 2.2 to 11 billion between 2012 and 2013. And our tax rates are starting to normalize from about 4% that we saw to 72%, as you know, we got out of assets which gave us some tax exempt income in 2012. I'm on slide 12, which essentially shows us the evolution of our revenue. Gross earnings closed at about 2.208 billion from 2.207 billion in 2012. And if you look at how this is split, interest income accounted for 70%, you know, down from 80% in 2012, and you know, and non-interest income at 30%, you know, up, you know, from 2010 to 2013. I mean, I talked about this earlier. Interest income declined in the year due to the sale of AMPON bonds, leading to asset book contraction and slower than expected loan growth. On the revenue side, non-interest income went up by about 48%, you know, which largely compensated for the drop in interest income. Slide 13, you know, which also shows the evolution of our net interest income. Net interest income was about 78 billion in 2013, you know, from about 100 billion in 2012. Now, what are the key drivers of what you see? Clearly, timing of loan growth was one of what we saw. We saw a very, very slow loan growth in the first half of the year. And so what you are seeing is, in terms of income, is only half of what you see, because on an average basis, you know, we didn't achieve a full average for the year. We also saw the impact of the additional liquidity that we have to sterilize in arising from increased cash reserve. In 2013, we sterilized over 70 billion, you know, from cash. And if you do the, that's almost half of that is about 4 billion in terms of the impact on interest income. Also, the lower than expected build up in our earning assets following the contraction in 2012. We started to build it up, and we saw that, you know, the asset book only grew about 5% in 2013. Yield on assets contracted about 180 basis points, largely resulting from the fact that what you see, most of the lending that you see on the books was essentially on the foreign currency side, and I mean the yields on the foreign currency loans are much lower than Naira. This is also coming from the fact that we had limited Naira lending capacity in the period. However, cost of funds improved, as I mentioned before, as we started to replace expensive funds with very low cost deposits. On slide 14, just shows us the evolution of our non-interest income. This is one, which is the area which has seen significant growth in 2013. Very, very strong growth in credit-related fees. I mean, coming from the back of the loan growth that we saw, strong transactional banking income, essentially as we started to engage our customer base and optimize our channels. So this is beginning to come to fruition. We also saw profit from disposal of idle assets that were acquired as part of the merger. We also saw dividends from our, you know, available for sale security. Also, trading income was very strong. And then the other income, including evaluation, given that talked about earlier. Slide 15, which essentially talks to our operating expenses. Our cost to income ratio, you know, increased from, which is, this is including the write back. If you take out the write back, the cost to income ratio is about 73%. So that's what we try to show, you know, with or without the write back. Operating expenses on a year-on-year basis grew about 19%, and as I mentioned before, if you see, if you move from about 2 billion to 11 billion in a particular expense line, you know, that in itself is very, very significant, as well as the fact that we had some non-recurring charges in the branding costs, significant repairs and maintenance on the infrastructure that was acquired, you know, given the state of that infrastructure. So we needed to spend quite a bit to bring them to the level where we can compete on ambience and service with our peer bank. Slide 17, which is 16, which is essentially our impairment analysis. We had a net write-back of about 6.2 billion due to what we call positive migration rating of our obligors. Now, if you look at in 2012, we had about 76% of our obligors in the risk rating 1 to 3. By 2013, this was up to 90%. So that shows you the significant movement in the obligor migration. And what this means is that from a collective impairment perspective, you will see some write-back of that. We've seen macro in loan quality. We've seen a good recovery this year. I think recovery this year was about 3 billion. We've seen the benefits of our improved risk management process start to come through as we've seen the positive migration. Also, we've continued to develop our risk management strategy to improve the quality of our loan portfolio as well with them assessed. On slide 17, which essentially shows you the statement of our financial position, I think the key item on this statement is essentially the loan growth, which I've mentioned, driven by high-end corporate and commercial banking customers. Investment securities declined by about 21%, largely because of the maturity in the AMCON bonds that matured at the end of the year, which are essentially set to be cash and treasury bills. We've also seen growth in customer deposits at 11%. Largely, this was limited by the runoff of expensive deposits that we had coming into 2013. On slide 18, essentially just talks to our loan book from a diversification perspective, as well as if you look at the various sectors that are well diversified. What we've also tried to show you is the evolution of, in terms of currency and the structure of our balance sheet. We've continued to grow the overall loan portfolio, like I said earlier, largely driven by increase in foreign currency book to high quality obligors. And these obligors have receivables in US dollars, which essentially mitigates FX risk. Our loan to deposit ratio is up to 61%, clearly on the back of our loan growth as we sought to optimize the balance sheet and sweat the balance sheet more than before. Slide 19, which is essentially on asset quality, which essentially shows how our asset quality has evolved since 2009. You see on the NPL ratio, we are down to 3%. From an absolute value of NPL perspective, NPL is down from about 34 billion to 22.6 billion. So, clearly, you see significant improvement in that. However, this has been driven by strong loan growth. We've also successfully recovered quite a bit. Also, we've written off some fully provisioned loans that have stayed more than 1 year in line with the CBN requirements. In terms of which sectors are accounting for this NPL, oil and gas downstream, general commerce, which is trading, as well as some information and communication. Today, we have a coverage of about 113%, which is more than adequate in terms of what we typically like our coverage ratio to be about 100%, but we are at 113%. This includes our regulatory risk reserve. We continue to mitigate these exposures by ensuring that we prioritize our asset quality through our very diligent and systematic approach to risk management. I'm on slide 20, which essentially highlights our deposit mix. Our deposit mix, like I said before, is getting better. We've seen a reduction in cost of funds coming from 2012. Our key drivers of this essentially growth in our deposits. Herbert has mentioned the fact that we've done a lot of segmentation. So as we segmented these customers, we engage them better, and we begin to see results in that regard. We started to extend the value chain to SME segment, which allows us to grow deposits in this segment as well. Also, on the personal banking side of things, we've also seen low-cost deposits coming through as we have continued to engage these customers. I'm on slide 21, which essentially talks to our capital base and some of the prudential ratios. If you look at where we are coming from, if you look at the evolution of both risk-weighted assets as well as our liquidity ratio. So in 2012, liquidity was about 60%. We closed at about 41%, largely on the back of the withdrawal of cash reserve, increase in cash reserve on public sector in 2013. Liquidated assets, you know, has gone up from about $1 billion to about $1.2 billion, reflecting the loan growth that you've seen. In terms of capital adequacy ratio, our capital is about 20%, which is largely impacted by loan growth. In the year, we also did WAPIC spin-off, which came to capital as well as interim dividend that was paid. So all of this impacted our capital ratios in 2013. We continue to enhance our capital adequacy, essentially through significant through increased profit retention to support our growth. I will now go on to the SBU financial performance review. Now I'm on slide 23. Essentially, the performance of the bank, today in 2013, is driven by the corporate and investment bank, commercial banking division, as well as the corporate and investment banking division, which account for significant proportion of what you see in terms of profitability. The business banking division, which is one of the divisions that we SBU that came on stream in 2013, it was still at this very was just starting to gain traction in terms of the penetration and market share acquisition in the SME segment. There are a number of initiatives that are in place, and we expect that in 2014 the division will become profitable in the course of the year. We continue to focus our retail on employees in the value chain, you know, and also to improve the engagement in this respect. Slide 24, just to take you through each of the SBUs, what we are thinking of, as well as their contributions to the bank's loans and deposits, as well as their loans and deposits and rest. So now, in terms of the corporate and investment banking division, clearly one of the things that we've seen and what they are doing is that increase the customer adoption of our corporate internet banking solution called Primot. This application allows you to do payments, financial supply management, receivable and collection management, you know, liquidity management, and the last, as well as reporting and reconciliation. And what this will allow our customers to do, be able to manage, do their account management better, drive lower cost of funds, and, you know, also increase activity within the value chain, you know, of our customers. This SBU continue to focus on international trade, a lot of projects and structured finance, also begin to deepen relationships in the upstream sector of the oil and gas. Commercial banking division, essentially in terms of the action plan and priorities, clearly the focus is to grow market share of the rental and the Asian customers. Also, in the various market segments of hospitality, lifestyle, schools, to seek out also very high-end infrastructure consumer and finance opportunity, as well as, you know, continue to empower customer management function to drive, you know, consistent and enjoyable customer experience, you know, in this market segment. Slide 26, which is business banking and the personal banking division. On the business banking division, the plan, you know, is to target religious bodies, also grow the market share of Oriental within this segment, because they're also present in the business banking segment. Also focus on women, market and target women, and also essentially focusing on payroll processing, you know, for a number of the selected customers. For personal banking, clearly one of the areas of focus is using the social media interaction to increase customer intimacy and engagement, and begin to embed a customer friendly culture within the organization. Launching a multi-channel loyalty scheme, essentially to, you know, optimize, you know, the penetration of our channels, and also to be able to sell multiple products within all the channels. Also to begin to drive high quality loan growth, you know, from our private banking segment. Also to begin to transit, you know, from high cost deposits to low cost deposits, to begin to reduce the cost of funds in this market segment. At this point, I would like to pass the ask Herbert to take the priorities as well as the 2014 targets.
Thank you, Sheikh. So for 2014, we have a couple of strategic priorities. And this is speaking to slide 27. The first of which is to improve service offering and to drive a new, brand new customer experience across our diversified market segments. And obviously, this will be done through, you know, enhanced business processes and transformation, as well as the automation which we have been working on. And this will cover both our wholesale business and our retail business. We have spent a lot of time trying to understand what could lead to a new level of customer experience and had come up with something like 44 initiatives which we're implementing. We believe that by implementing these initiatives, it will take us firmly back to the top five in the KPMG surveys on customer satisfaction in 2014. And we believe that by 2017, we should be one of the top three banks easily from a customer service retail segment. This obviously would lead to significant increase in market share from all our customers. The second is a focus on enhancing the sales effectiveness of our enlarged sales force. Obviously, having digested and completed our integration, all we're doing now is that we have an enlarged marketing team as well as support function, and the idea is to train and ensure that our people develop the skills to ensure, you know, precise and significant customer acquisition, create a structure that ensures that we grow market share even after the acquisition and subsequently maintain that level of market share which we would have obtained. Several things need to be done. First of all, I mean, apart from the traditional manner with which we would look at our sales force, we are tweaking it slightly to look at some more behavioral aspects, all right, that would, or models that would basically ensure that we can basically be more passionate or aggressive, if you like, in terms of how we attract, in terms of how we push our market share. The third is leveraging on technology as a competitive advantage. We're optimizing, you know, our skill and our current IT infrastructure, all right, to serve both the retail and wholesale markets. We've come up with very interesting products from an IT standpoint, as far as our wholesale market is concerned, which is basically not only enhancing our market share from our cash management business in terms of handling the entire value chain aspect, all the way from distributors to payments to vendors to payments to for payroll, you know, et cetera, you know, at the wholesale end. But more interestingly, at the retail end, we are coming up with very interesting structures around how our branches are configured, creating a few more e-branches, express branches, that would help to reduce our cost of serving our retail business, all right, while enhancing the operating efficiencies, if you like, around serving them. And the fourth point is enhancing of our overall risk management. With an institution the size that we are now, diversified, with about 7 million customers and a bit more, risk management, our existing risk management function has been enhanced, all right, to reflect the nature of the institution that we have, not just to serve the wholesale and retail, the wholesale part of the business, but also, all right, using technology and various models to also serve, you know, the different segments of our retail business, to ensure that the quality of our loan book and assets also remain extremely strong. The whole idea is to make sure that we return to a situation as you've traditionally known us to record significant earnings, sustainable earnings, and good quality earnings. And that is what is critical to us. In terms of our 2014 targets, which you see on slide 28, we believe that in 2014, we should begin to attain ROE levels of about 20% by driving profitability, as I said, and deepening market share of our top 300 corporates and their value chain, as well as increasing the velocity of money and, you know, non-fee, non-interest income, all right, that comes from other aspects of the bank like the SME business, our personal banking, and all of that. We believe that we should be able to maintain a net interest margin around about 7%, even though we know that there are strong headwinds with respect to cost of funds and pricing at the top end of the market. We think that we should be able to continue to hold on our cost of funds while basically growing our revenues or tweaking our portfolio ever so slightly to ensure that we can maintain a net interest margin of about 7%. Our cost-to-income ratio, we expect to be able to bring down in 2014 from 70% to 65% by optimizing our resource base and growing our revenues. We believe that our non-interest revenues would also begin to kick in from anywhere between 25 to 30% to be able to ensure that our cost-to-income ratio is maintained at about 65%. Loan growth is expected to be around about 20% across the year because there's an accelerated drive to grow a high-quality loan portfolio. We understand the need to grow risk assets to basically shield or manage the regulatory headwind, but it is just as important to ensure that we maintain the quality of that portfolio and to ensure that we continue to deepen market share and increase the cash management arrangements we have with high corporates, with the high-end corporates, so that we can maintain the overall yield. We think that our deposit growth will touch about 25%. And here, what are we talking about? We're talking about increasing the level of customer activity, increasing or reducing the level of dormancy of our retail accounts, which were acquired. If you recall, in 2012 and 2013, we had a customer dormancy that was around about 70% because of the significant number of names which were acquired from Intercontinental. We think that dormancy rate will drop to around about 60% or less in 2014. And by dropping, what you see is increased customer activity, increased liability, all right? And by pushing all of that, we think that we'll be able to attain a 25% growth. In closing, I would once again like to reassure you that we are now back on track to deliver superior earnings. Our first 10 years in Access Bank, we consistently met our investor expectations, and our decision to do the Intercontinental acquisition was of course born out of our ambition to create a diversified institution which would deliver enhanced value and sustainable earnings growth. Normally, there is a short-term adjustment or impact in making such a transformational move. In our case, that impact was further exacerbated by the regulatory headwinds which we face, and you have seen those impacts over the past 2 years. But 2013 will certainly prove to be the pivotal and transitional year for us. We are now in a position to reap the full benefits of the acquisition and return to sustainable growth. I look forward to your continued support as we deliver on our medium-term strategy and targets. Thank you very much for taking time to listen to our presentation today. I will now like to invite you to put your questions to myself, Sheyi, and the rest of the executive team gathered here with me today. Thank you. I will now take your questions.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. If you would like to ask a question at this time, please press the star or asterisk key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone. Please ensure that the mute function on your telephone is switched off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. If you find that your question has already been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star 2. Again, please press star 1 to ask a question, and we will pause just for a moment to allow everyone to signal. So we'll take our first question from Muya Oni from SBG. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. Thank you for the presentation and taking our questions. My name is Muya Oni. I have three questions. The first is on asset growth outlook. Over the last 2 years, it's been sluggish compared to the sector average, and I would say it's understandable given the because you were concentrating on digesting ICB. And so for me, I'm just trying to understand if the restructuring of the portfolio is over now, or you still expect to see some further restructuring in 2014, and then where you see asset growth going over the next 2 years. And the second is just getting some clarification on your loan portfolio. There was immaterial growth in loans to government in 2013. It was up threefold. So I was just trying to understand what the drivers of this growth was and expectations for 2014. And also some more color on your NPL to the ICT sector. There was also a material increase from 4% to 29% of total NPL. Also want some color on that. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take a couple more and then we would answer all of them.
So we will take our next question from Soji Solanke from Renaissance Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. This is Soji Solanke from RenCap. I have a few questions. The first one is just to ensure we're on the same page. 20% ROE is roughly about 45, 48 billion in profit after tax. Is that the case? My second question is, I'm just trying to understand better how you can deliver non-interest revenue growth of 25% off a base, which has some...
You said, I didn't hear you, you said 10% ROE is what?
In your 20% ROE target is about 45, 48 billion in PAT. So I'm trying to ensure that we're on the same page in terms of your guidance. Then my second question is, you get it 25% non-interest revenue. What I'm really trying to understand here is how confident you are in your ability to deliver that, given there were some one-off items in the base, you know, like the valuation gain, and also the strong run-up in credit-related fees in Q4. My third question is, what is your target year-end cost number, and does this include any one-offs? So basically, I pretty much just compared you versus your peers. So you had 101 billion in 2013 costs, and your GTB was 82, UBA was 107. Shouldn't there be room for some cost cutting, or we're not there just yet? Then my final question is on NPLs. What problems did you have in ICT? It basically moved from 4% in 2012 to 29% of NPLs in FY 2013. And what issues persist in your downstream NPL book? Thank you.
Okay. One more, please.
We'll now take a question from Bunmi Asaolu from FBN Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my questions. Some have already been asked by Muiwa and Soji, but if you could maybe just clarify what assumptions you have on tax rate, other comprehensive income, and discontinued operations within that 20% ROE guidance again. So I'm just adding a bit more to this question. And I mean, I'm asking in particular because last year discontinued operations cost you 1.2 billion, and obviously other comprehensive income was even more. So any color you can give us on those two lines in particular will be helpful. And if there are any updates as well on discontinued operations in terms of what you're selling or disposing, that would really help. Now, on non-interest income in 2013, you mentioned there were some one-off gains that helped that line. Can you specify exactly how much actually impacted Q4? So not just 2013, just Q4. That would really help. And then I guess sort of going back to Sergio's question on OPEX again, you said in October, I think, that normalized OPEX should be about 25 billion. Again, there were some one-offs that threw the numbers off in 2013, especially I think in Q2. So should we be working with 25 billion going forward still in terms of normalized OPEX? Thanks.
Okay, I think we can take this, we can answer these questions and then we'll take a fresh set. I will speak to the issues around asset growth. loan to government and expectations. Shayi will talk about, address a lot of CG's questions around the profit after tax figure as determined, ROE that would be $45 billion, as well as cost issues and a lot of Bumi's questions. Now, obviously, with respect to asset growth, when you do an acquisition, it's not a time for you to start growing loans at that particular point in time, because it is more important for you to focus on ensuring that you have a proper integration and assimilation, particularly in this case where we had an institution that had twice or three times more people than access. If you attempt to grow your loan book at that time, you'll be creating a heightened risk environment that will not be appropriate, and I'm sure will not be good for shareholders. So up until 2013, loan growth was sluggish, but in 2013, we started to grow the loan book, and because of the regulatory headwinds, we focused more on that, which was at the dollar end. Because we have a huge dollar portfolio, we felt it was better to go into that aspect of the portfolio and basically lend to the high-quality dollar-generating name. It also helped that we had acquired several strong institutions who were now willing to borrow from us, given our enhanced size. So in terms of loan growth and what we see generally over the years, we believe that a reasonable figure to expect would be something like 20%, because in an environment where you see very strong headwinds, CRR not only on public sector being increased, you also have CRR on private sector being increased, you also have to be careful so that you don't run into a liquidity issue. So we think that at 20% growth rate, we should be fine. Now, in terms of the loans to government, we had also built up a couple of relationships with some state governments, and we decided to support them in terms of their infrastructure, supporting their infrastructure, particularly for those state governments where we had their internally generated funds, revenue, which were more than sufficient, all right, to cover the repayments, the monthly repayments that would come in the course of the year. So most of what you would see happen to do with the loan growth largely to River State government and a few other states. And the whole idea was to support them to make payments to their private sector contractors, all right, whom we now bank and who would basically deliver on those projects. So the catch was not really the state government, was more directed at the private sector names that were doing incremental business with them. And so those payments were made specifically to those clients within Access Bank. And since we are now in control of most of the independent and non-discretionary cash flows of the state, we're able to apply it to reduce the exposure. Are we going to do a lot more going into next year? We think that as you approach an election year, it is time to be a lot more cautious and ensure that all you have is cleaned up, and then you basically review the political scenario as you get into the next financial year.
Ladies and gentlemen, please stand by as we are experiencing a momentary disruption in today's conference call. Please stand by. Go ahead.
Yes, I think I must have stopped at the point where I was speaking about the NPL ratio, and I said it was largely to one or two names in telecom who had a deterioration in the quality of the assets, and so we had to basically downgrade those assets. Those assets were largely to customers, suburban telecoms, if you like, in as far as telecoms is concerned, and another customer in the downstream oil and gas sector. So those were the things that would have impacted our NPL ratio. So I will now get Shei to talk a bit more on the other questions that have to do with prognosis for profit after tax, given the ROE expectations, which we think will meet, issues around the operating costs, issues around comprehensive income and discontinued operations, as well as, you know, the OPEX for 2014.
Thank you, Herbert. I think I would like to start with the prognosis for the ROE, which you put at 20%. I think the question Soji was asking is this comes to about 45 to 48% PAT.
I mean,
45 billion to 48% PAT, depending on the tax rate. Yeah, this is correct. This is what we have modeled, and this is what we are targeted in terms of the ROE number. So we are looking at the tax rate, in which is one of the questions that was asked later, of about 17%, because our tax has now started to normalize, you know, back to the levels that it was before before 2012. And in terms of OPEX, I mean, our prognosis is that, yes, our OPEX will be in the range of 23 to 25 billion a quarter. You know, so that's what we are planning with. The question around the discontinued operation, 2013 was not a typical year, because this was the year that we actually exited about, you know, five both banking and non-banking subsidiaries, and therefore you had a big amount that you saw in discontinued operation. Next year, 2014, we're only going to have about, you know, as we continue to exit, you know, largely from the some of the banking subsidiaries that we told you about that we're going to exit. We are out of Cote d'Ivoire. Next year, you see, in 2014, I mean, you will see Burundi,
out of Burundi.
You know, so that's the only country that you basically see. So the discontinued operation impact won't be as significant as you have seen in 2013. In terms of the non-interest revenue, one of the gains that I saw in Q4 was about $3 billion, which essentially was coming from the valuation income coming from our investment property portfolio. So that it was about $3 billion. Tax assumption, like I said, you know, will be about 17% in going into 2014.
But let me also let you know that talking about the confidence in our growing, 25% growth rate in non-interest income, we remain extremely confident. If you go back and look at what it has been historically, that number has been achieved consistently, largely over time. And we don't believe there's any reason why it cannot be done going into 2014 at a time in which we are showing significant customer acquisition and reactivation as far as retail is concerned on retail banking names. So, you know, you see significant income coming both at the top end of the market as well as, you know, charges from transaction banking and all of that at the retail end.
Just wanted to answer one of the other questions that I think I missed out on the OCI. I think the big point in the OCI was the translation loss, about $7 billion, largely coming from Ghana. You know, as you have seen, the CD depreciated significantly in the course of 2013, starting from 2012. So this, but we don't expect that to continue in 2014. So we see a bit reduction in this transition result. So this was largely Ghana. I think we can take the next set of questions.
Thank you. We'll take the next question from Andrew Breezy Obike from Stanbic. Please go ahead.
Hello, good afternoon. Thanks for the presentation. I have a few questions. My first question is, I'll get an issue called explain further what you mean by the positive obligor migration. I'm struggling to understand what you actually mean there. And then I'm also worried about the non-improvement in your deposit mix for the past 3 years, that is, the non-improvement in your deposit mix, even though your cost of funds has improved, but the deposit mix has remained stable at that 8%. Is this deliberate, or at what level do you think you want your term deposit to be as a percentage of total deposit? Also, looking at your loan book mix, you seem to have a significant concentration in the oil and gas and also the government sector, and I believe this, I'm worried about how the implementation of Basel II will affect you in terms of you'll be required to make set aside extra capital for concentration, especially your government exposure. Then, if you could also provide more light on your foreign currency assets, what is the average yield on these assets, and what sectors do you have your lending exposed to, so that I can understand how the foreign currency exposure is bringing down, negatively affecting your overall asset yield. Thank you.
Thank you, BK. We'll take more questions.
So we'll take the next question from Tunde Oyo from Harding Lovner. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Just one question for me. I'm looking at the notice of the annual general meeting, the one from your website, and you're requesting shareholder approval for a capital raise. Why exactly do you need the capital raise, and what exactly are you trying to do? So any more color on that would be very helpful. Thank you.
More questions?
So we'll take now a question from Ronak Gadia from Exotics. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Just more in line with the previous caller regarding the capital that you're trying to raise. Be good if you can tell us what tranches are you expecting to draw down that capital, and what the timing for this tranches would be. Apart from that, just two other questions. The first one's to do with your net interest margin. You're expecting a pretty significant improvement in net interest margin, so it would be good if you could give us some guidance as to what will be the driver. I mean, what's your cost of funds expectations, and what's your asset yield expectations for the year? The third question is to do with your non-interest income. I think you've spent quite a lot of time explaining this, but can you give us some color into what you expect your COT to do this year, because there's another decline coming through this year. Thank you.
Okay, one more question.
So we take one more question from Gloria Obayabgubo from CSL. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, thank you for taking my question. Just a few questions from me. On fee and commission income, apart from the fact it's been quite unpredictable quarter on quarter, and it's been totally difficult to predict your quarterly fee and commission income. I want to find out if going into 2014 we still expect this irregularity in the quarters. Two, can you please tell me what percentage of your deposits are dollar denominated? And currently, how much of AMCON bonds do you have left in your books? And what percentage of your deposits are still public sector deposits? And is there any active strategy to reduce that?
Okay. All right. So I will take the questions that have to do with the issues around shareholder approval for capital raise. And then I will get our chief risk officer to take questions around the quality of our loan book, the positive obligor migration, and all of that. And of course, Sheyi
we'll focus on the other issues around NIM, interest income, non-interest income, its regularity, and all of that. Let me start by saying that we have a very disciplined capital plan. For most of you who have known us or invested in Access Bank since 2002. And I can let you know up front that there's no near-term desire, all right, to raise Tier 1 capital. Certainly not. You know, we are fully aware of the implications to shareholders, so that is not in the office. However, we will do things that are necessary to ensure that, depending on how the market plays out, that we remain strong from a capital adequacy standpoint and that we minimize whatever concentrations we see on our books. So I do hope that answers questions that have to do with shareholder approvals for a capital raise. You could raise money at any time to ensure that, one, you reduce concentrations, you could issue any type of instrument, but the whole idea for us is to make sure that should we choose to do anything at any point in time, we have whatever approvals that are required. But certainly, we are not doing anything that has to do with any type of Tier 1 type capital. Now, I will get Greg Jobome to talk a bit about ratings migration and the issues around our loan book and lending to oil and gas and government and its implication from a Basel II standpoint and what that means to our capital.
Okay, thank you, Herbert. In terms of the obligo migration, essentially it refers to the performance of the customer. Now, there are two perspectives to it, as Sheri said earlier on. In terms of the overall portfolio, we had a migration. If we take all our customers, we rate them from 1 to 8. Now, the best rated names are from 1 to 3. Now, best rated means that they meet all the obligations, they have no issues with them, they have never had to call on any facility, et cetera, and all the whole range of characteristics. Now, that category, we are seeing a migration steadily from 78% now up to 90% of the loan book. So that's the first dimension of it. So it's an overall migration. But the second aspect of it is within that, you then have categories that were maybe they were 4 or 5 due to performance, they're meeting the obligations, their cash flows are coming in, nothing is past due, et cetera, they move to the next level. Now that's another dimension to the migration. So overall, migration within performance, between performing and non-performing, and then migration within performance buckets. So there are the two levels to it. I hope that addresses that aspect of the question. Now, I'll move on to the issue around oil and gas and Basel III implications. Now, the central bank has a guidance on what to do about sectoral concentration. There are two specific guidelines that we have. One is around government lending. 10% maximum is what the government has stipulated, and Access Bank has no intention of reaching 10% or no talk of exceeding 10%. So that is one side of it. The other side is around the oil and gas. Now, the oil and gas is split into 3 sectors for the purpose of capital-related computation in line with, again, central bank guidance. So we talk about oil and gas upstream, downstream, and services. Now, for each of these areas, you must not exceed 20% of your loan book. If you exceed 20%, it means that your capital, the whole of that portfolio is not going to be rated 150% risk weighting. Now, those are not necessarily Basel II requirements. These are Central Bank of Nigeria requirements. And of course, from what I've said, you can see that oil and gas portfolio combined, whether upstream, downstream, services for Access Bank, is about 28%. So the highest within that is 17% downstream. So we have not even reached that 20%, on top of going beyond it. So again, there's no immediate implication. From a Basel II perspective, the implications come largely around the quality of your name and under the central bank guidelines in terms of how well collateralized the facility is. Those are the two things. So therefore, you wouldn't see an implication from our current portfolio around the oil and gas portfolio from the point of view of capital computation. So I hope that addresses that question.
Okay. Shi?
Okay, I'll take the, I think there are a couple of questions on the FCY loan book and then the asset yield. Yeah, in terms of the what you find on a yield basis for the asset loan book, so it's around 4.5%. You are also asking about what sectors. I mean, largely this is the oil and gas midstream, you know, midstream and upstream. You know, that's where the exposure to our foreign currency asset is.
Services,
yes, and upstream. Now, on net interest margin, clearly you are trying to find out, you gave a guidance of something like 7%. Now, if you look at, as we had explained, the reduction in our NII was as a result of, you know, we have moved the loan book to the foreign currency side. Largely, given the limited capacity we had to lend in Naira, but that has been resolved now. A big portion of the AMCON bond has matured, you know, which we received cash and treasury. So we are going to begin to see, you know, some more Naira lending. So that 20% that we projected, you know, you are going to begin to see more Naira lending. So really, the yield will move from about 10.8 to about 11.5, and that's where, you know, that it's very difficult to bring down cost of funds given the environment, so we'll keep our cost of funds at the level that they are, but it's more from the fact that we are now switching in 2014, you know, to Naira lending book. That's where we'll see the yield uptick. In terms of COT, I mean, I think, you know, another earning commission, if you look at our customer base today, most of the customers that have COT are already at this limit, you know, so really you don't have that many customers who pay COTs that are below. So really, we don't see any significant impact, you know, no more than 10% reduction in COT, because most of the customers who generate the COT are already at the 1 naira or don't pay COT already. You know, so that answers the question. Now, in terms of net interest income, yeah, in 2013 we had quite a bit of one-off, you know, that came from quarter to quarter, but I think in 2014, there's going to be more predictability around what you see in terms of net interest income. On the AMCON side, we still have about 65 billion left, which will mature in October 2014. You know, so that's on AMCON bonds. Public sector deposits, today we had about 12% of our total deposit book is in public sector. I think that yes,
Gloria. Just to reassure you, with increased activity levels, what you will see is that the non-interest income coming from increased velocity of money, increased activities within the value chain, and the fact that we are now growing our loan properly would help to smoothen, you know, the non-earning interest, the non-interest income, all right, that you saw, you know, in 2013. Yes, you will still have those lump sums coming in, because if you track where they came from, the dividends from investments, whether it is MTN, etc., will continue to come. But what you will now see is that increased activity levels in other months would ensure that it smoothens the overall impact. So I think you will see a much better year with a much more predictable and sustainable income. We will take more questions.
Perfect. We'll now take a question from UK Gavadza from African Alliance Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking time to take our calls. I think most of my questions have been answered, but I think I have two more questions for you. The first question is to do with the business segments, personal banking and business banking. I'm not sure if you have got stats for that, but do you have cost-to-income ratios for those two units? I think that will be the first question. The other question is on the dividend payout ratio going forward. I'm not sure if I got you right there, but you guided on increased capital retention. Would you also care to give us guidance on your target DPR ratio for 2014? The third question will probably be on Forex. I think it has partly been answered as well, but if you can also provide growth guidance on Forex loans and Forex funding as well in 2014. Thank you.
Forex what?
Forex loans.
Okay. Okay. And then, anybody else?
Yes, we'll take a question from Deepinder Bhatia from Bayal Asset Management.
Hi, thanks for the call. My question is a little bit more macro. We've seen recently some stresses in financial markets coming through high inflation, interest rates, and some stresses on the currency. Could you please also just reflect on what the emerging macro what you see in the emerging macro environment and how you plan to tackle it? Thank you.
Okay. Any more questions?
We will take one question from Steve Motsi from BPI Capital. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. My first question really is regarding your subsidiaries. I know you've been selling off a few of them. I just want to get a sense of what's the strategy around further growth for the business outside of Nigerian borders. And then can we get some guidance on your impairment charge for 2014? I might have missed this. If you just let us know what you're expecting to provision for this year. And when can we expect your first quarter numbers to be out?
Okay. Okay, can we take one more set of questions, please?
Thank you. We'll take another question from Tunde Ojo from Harding Lovesner. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you very much. I'm sorry I had to come back. One of my questions is what the last caller asked, actually, is about cost of risk. The second one is around the AMCON bond that you were able to redeem in December, if I remember correctly. I just want to get a sense of how much of the yield uptick you got on that. I think it should be about 200 billion naira. So I know the yield on those bonds are about 10%. Now they've been able to convert them. Are they in treasury bills? What kind of money did you get from that? Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Is that it? Okay. I think these may be the last set of questions, but let us. We'll take this and see how much time we probably have. First of all, I would, you know, Sheyi would talk about the cost to income ratio. I'll talk about impairment charges for 2014, as well as, you know, the numbers around the yield uptake, as Tunde asked, with respect to the AMCON bonds. Obinna now will talk about our subsidiaries, you know, and if we are attempting to do anything, you know, anything in 2014, and then the strategy for growth. And then I will talk about the macro issues on the, you know, and the impact of currency. But let me first start by saying that we have a dividend payout plan, generally, which is tied to three or four different factors. First of all, it's geared towards ensuring that whatever growth we see in the next year from a capital expenditure standpoint, it must be able to be funded by the profits of the immediately preceding year. Secondly, that we ensure that there is a reasonable dividend yield. And thirdly, depending on where we are on our capital adequacy ratio, to ensure that we stick within what is acceptable to the bank. Now, is there going to be increased dividend payouts going into the future? It will depend on all of these three factors. which are dynamic, and ensure that we maintain the overall high quality risk of the institution. That's the much I can talk about with respect to dividend payout going into 2014. As a sign that you see strong headwinds, perhaps give the persist. It's not the time to make any commitment as to how much to pay. I think the dividend policy, for it to be robust, must reflect and address issues around capital adequacy, around capital expenditure, and what is reasonable yield. And if the market is fine, and you are doing extremely well, hopefully, market prices should start to reflect, where the institution's strength as it grows. So I would like Shay to start to talk about our cost to income ratio, and issues around impairment and all of that. I will close topic, after with the issues around the macro.
Okay, I think the question was around the business segment, the cost to income ratio in the personal banking and the business banking. Like I said during the presentation, particularly for the business banking segment, this is a business that we just started, so we've allocated the resources and we've just started to gain traction in this business. So in the initial phase, we were clear that we will see this type of cost income ratio. Now, as this business gains traction, increase market share, gain penetration, we'll begin to see them make profit. It's a question of we just started. We knew that we are going to it's going to be slow at the start, but it's a segment that we see significant potential, and we're ready to put in the resources from the onset so that we know that we provide the resources required to get into that market properly.
However, it was a segment that we had ignored in the past, and we know that there's significant, once you make the necessary investment, you will begin to see the returns. These SMEs are typically vendors of most of the large corporates or operate within target sectors, where you can basically lend to. All right? So the whole idea is that now we've gotten into these sectors, the pricing will get better, we will start to reap the liability impact of generating liabilities from these names, and hopefully over the next 2 years or 3 years, you will start seeing that whole sector begin to make a lot of profitability. From the presentations you've seen, you will see that the level of facilities which we are currently giving to that sector is still very, very, very insignificant, not reflective of the good quality names you may find that exist there. So the whole idea now is for us to start to data mine, all right, the names and the priority sectors that we are comfortable with from a risk standpoint, and for us to deepen the amount of payroll-based loans we will do as far as personal banking is concerned, all right, and where the yields are also higher than you will find at the top end of the market. That way, as we grow and generate the liabilities as well as assets to a lesser extent, you will see the sectors begin to make a lot of profit in 2 years, going into 3 years.
I think there was also a question around the guidance for Forex loan growth. One of the things that we said was that in 2013, that we were very strong on that on foreign currency, but in 2014, this is going to switch, and therefore we don't expect significant growth on the foreign currency loan book. Yes, we'll see some growth, but it's more on the naira loan book that you see the growth that we projected of 20%. Yeah, on Amcombon, we received some of the monies in treasury bills and cash. Now, the treasury essentially were at about 12.2%, which was, maybe 150 basis points above what was on the Amcombon. So, you see some yield pick up on those on the bond, on the repayment side.
Okay, open us to talk about the
Divestment
subsidiaries, okay, and the strategy for growth.
Okay, concerning the subsidiaries, generally our approach is to concentrate on high impact markets where we believe that the earnings are deep enough to cover the cost of risk. So following from that, you would see that we divested from Cote d'Ivoire and Burundi in the early part of this year, and finalizing negotiations on Gambia. We are looking to establish a rep office in the first instance in China before the end of this year. And also, the within Africa, markets like Kenya, we think they are good to explore and in the near future. But that's basically the plan on growing our business outside Nigeria.
So the idea is that, first of all, we basically rationalize our subsidiaries to reflect, as Obinna said, the high impact environment. So the high impact economy. So Ghana is high impact. We will continue to invest significantly in Ghana. All right. And this year, those economies that we are sure we don't want to stay in, we'll try and make sure we exit from them. Any subsequent investments to be made would of course reflect the size of the economy. With respect to the cost of risk, we think that the cost of risk guidance for 2014 will be about 1%. You know, and we think that should be enough given the nature and quality of obligors that we have. Now, we expect that with respect to the Q1 figures, you will see it, you know, by the end of April, you know, after we've had our board meeting, you know, and obtained board approval for the numbers. Now, Burton had asked about macroeconomic issues we are beginning to see, not just in Nigeria, but in different countries in the emerging markets. And I think in the case of Nigeria, it is clear. First of all, the medium to long-term economic prospects of the country remain extremely strong because we think oil prices will remain at a reasonable price and given the oil production that we have. Now, obviously, issues arise around fiscal discipline and things like that. And, of course, going into an election year, what is likely to happen with respect to government spending. But I think what you would see is the fact that in an election year is also not a good time, it's not expedient for anybody to think of devaluing the currency. And I think the central bank, as you would have seen over the past 2 years, is primed towards ensuring that we have price stability. Now, and if interest rates suffer for it, well, it would just be the collateral damage. Now, so what are we likely to see? We can continue to see some continued tightening, you know, from a monetary policy standpoint, as you've seen. All our budgets have been based on an expectation that what we see will continue, and perhaps there can be a bit more tightening as well as far as public sector funds is concerned, you know, and maybe even an increase in cash reserves, you know, private sector. Obviously, there will be a limit to all of these restrictions, if you like, over time. But we believe that will continue to ensure that there's reasonable price stability as far as, you know, exchange rates are concerned. Now, what are we doing? You know, as you know, we don't play and we don't take positions in currencies and things like that. All you find on our dollar book is geared towards good quality dollar generating assets, top multinationals in the upstream, and the service sector of the oil and gas business. These obligors are typically rated risk rating 1 or risk rating 2, and that is why you see the type of asset yields that you see. But we believe that in exposing ourselves to those particular names, you know, we are safe, and under any circumstance, we will be able to, our funds are, you know, from a good quality, from a quality standpoint, our funds are safe. Now, the only other thing which we are doing, which we have reduced to a large extent, is to ensure that even for our trade facilities, those who are basically going to be using our confirmation lines or use those facilities, again, risk rating 1 or risk rating 2 names, which, as we've seen from the quality of migrations of credit, that is where you find most of our credits have migrated to. So that is our position with respect to the stress which we are beginning to see at the macro level, which is being reflected, obviously, in the reduction in reserves and all of that. So we are very careful and in terms of managing, you know, our overall balance sheet, you know, in terms of exposing ourselves to this market risks. We will take more questions, and I think if there's any more questions, we will take one set of questions, and I think that will bring us to the end of today's conference call.
Okay, so Gloria Obayagbo from CSL will ask the next questions. Please go ahead.
Yeah, sorry, I don't think I got an answer on my question on percentage of deposits that are dollar denominated. So I was cut off at some point.
It's about 25%, Gloria.
Okay, thank you very much.
Cool. Well, gentlemen, thank you very much for dialing in. We are happy. We believe we had a productive session, and we look forward to our next conference call with you. Thank you very much, and have a good day.
Ladies and gentlemen, that will conclude today's conference call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.